Let's take a look at audio description. Now, we talk about this a great deal around television, cinemas, theatres, other arts venues as well. What about sports, pre-recorded sports programmes or live sports? What's difficult about it? What's easy about it? What stage are we at? Well, we thought we would speak with Rhys Lloyd from Descriptive Video Works. He's based in Victoria in Canada. Thank you very much for joining us, Rhys.
Well, thanks, Alan. So Descriptive Video Works was founded in 2003, so we're coming up on 20 years. Our founder, Diane Johnson, started it in the early part of the 21st century just as a response to a significant gap in the Canadian market specifically at the time, and but just overall that there was just not enough people providing the audio description service or what is called in Canada described video. She'd come from a broadcast background herself, and so she worked with different entities in Canada. And over the course of time, obviously, the company's grown and reached a wider client base, but also a wider, audience base, working with various, streaming companies, Netflix, etc. And now we are offering audio description in eight different languages, and we have a significantly sized team scattered all over the globe, producing audio description, including for live sporting events.
So it has grown quite a bit. An audio description is growing. The call for it is growing. And I suppose with a lot of the platforms, like as you mentioned, Netflix or Amazon or Apple TV Plus, that kind of thing, they are making a drive to make a lot more of their content accessible, including audio description. Now, you must have noticed that yourself.
Oh, for sure. It's been pretty explosive in terms of the growth in the last few years. And I don't know that the pandemic necessarily accelerated. It certainly changed the nature of how we operate. But I think the pandemic happened to sort of coincide with the growth of other streaming services, or the sort of creation of other streaming services like Disney Plus and HBO Max and all those other ones. And so, I mean, we're definitely seeing that growth, and it's fantastic to see that accessibility is being a consideration as all of those services launch.
So let's look at sport then, in terms of audio description. It's probably wanted more being a live event, and I suppose that throws up a great deal of challenges for you guys.
What excites us most and and what presents the most significant challenge is live sports, but it's a challenge we're really excited about meeting because I think that's an area that is currently underserved. And so for us, that journey started in the 2012 Olympics in London, working with both CBC in Canada and NBC in the United States for their Olympic coverage. And initially, it was opening and closing ceremonies. And in fact, the two Olympics, the Tokyo Summer Games and the Beijing Winter Games, our team did almost 500 hours of content for those games, between the Olympics and Paralympic Games for NBC, and about a similar number of hours for CBC in Canada. It's to date sort of more focused, I think, on those larger, longer events like the Olympics and Paralympics, but there's really nothing preventing a similar approach being taken to recurring broadcasts of live sports, and there's a lot of value inherent in it.
It does throw up a lot of challenges, live sport. You know,
Sure.
do your audio description? You go for it. You know, if there's a race on or a football match or a skiing event, do you just go for it and describe, or do you try to work in between, say, the commentator's dialogue as well? You know, when you think about programs that you'd watch on your streaming platform or your TV channel, you guys get to see that. You get to work out your scripts. You get to fit the scripts in between the actors' dialogue. That really doesn't happen, though, does it, for live sport?
It doesn't. And it presents a really interesting challenge. You're hitting on there's sort of two different approaches available to live sports audio description. One is to effectively replace the entire primary announcer team and do a descriptive version of that sort of primary announcement. And then that way you're not worried about stepping on the other announcer's team. Our approach is more aligned with traditional audio description in that we try to fit in the gaps. The challenge being, we don't really know when those gaps are going to happen. And, sports announcers, in particular, sports announcers in North America, tend to chatter a fair bit, and so trying to find the appropriate way in which to insert valuable visual descriptions is a challenge. But the research we've done, focus groups, this, our view is it's preferable to do it that way because it creates a more inclusive experience for the blind and low vision audience, in that in many cases, the broadcast of live sports, the announcers are as big a part of the experience as the teams on the field. And why wouldn't you want the blind and low vision audience to partake in that sort of cultural experience of, can you believe that announcer said that thing about the player? Like, you want to make sure that all of that is still available while also trying to create a more accessible experience. And so we choose probably the more challenging path of like trying to work around the primary announcing team, but we think it's worth that challenge. And what's even more interesting, when you talk about an event like the Olympics, it's not one announcing team. It's like a dozen or so broadcast teams doing each of the individual sports. You know, if you were to do a rugby match and you do it week in, week out, you sort of learn what the announcement team, what they're going to say and when they're going to say it, and whether this person's more of a storytelling announcer or this person's more, and you try to figure out exactly where your value add is. If you're doing the Summer Olympics, the team that's announcing the rowing isn't going to be the same team that's announcing the gymnastics, and you're trying to figure out how each of them approaches it while you're doing it live on the air. It creates its own interesting challenges, but I think we're sort of building up a good body of knowledge in terms of what the audience accepts in terms of occasionally having to step on the primary announcers and what the audience would prefer we avoid. And I think it's getting more and more refined the more we do it. And as I said, I think in a recurring broadcast environment, like a weekly football match or rugby game, I think you would find it even more seamless because it's almost like the describer would become an adjunct to the primary announcing team because they would learn the sort of habits and rhythms.
We are talking with Rhys Lloyd from Descriptive Video Works. We're looking at audio description in sports. More coming up a little bit later.
The Daily Connect on RNIB Connect Radio.
We are talking with Rhys Lloyd from Descriptive Video Works. We're looking at audio description in sports, whether that's recorded sports or indeed the growth in describing live sports. Being that more and more people now, sort of blind and partially sighted, are using smart devices, whether it's sort of phones or tablets or smart televisions, has it even been looked at almost like a creating maybe even like a simultaneous broadcast, so you could select if you wanted the standard commentary, or now I'm going to select the audio describe broadcast because I just want to hear the kick by kick kind of description, something like that?
I think that broadcast, and you'll have to forgive me, I'm certainly more familiar with the sort of broadcast infrastructure in North America than I am in the UK. But broadcast in general has come with some legacy infrastructure that sometimes makes it challenging to provide accessible tracks for as much content as we'd like. In the United States, for instance, the audio description track is often competing with a Spanish language alternative track. And so for large events like the Super Bowl, for instance, that, you know, the Spanish language track is what occupies that channel on that legacy infrastructure. Streaming is an interesting alternative path as more and more services pop up, maybe that are both like a subscriber-based TV channel, but also web-based, because some of those limitations don't exist. And you do create an alternative audio environment where you could listen to any number of different types of tracks, whether it be a full descriptive commentary, whether it's to incorporate a radio announcement team into a TV broadcast, or whether it's to have the primary TV broadcast but with descriptive inserts from a live describer.
What would be your preference then if you're going to be a spectator for a game? What would you prefer?
Well, what we hear from the audience is that they prefer to be able to hear the primary announcers because they are sort of part of the fabric of culture in many respects. Like, I know this is true in the UK as much as it is in North America. A lot of the sports announcers are former sports heroes of yesterday. And so there's an affinity that the audience has with those people, and they want to hear what they might have to say about the events that are transpiring live on the field. And so I think that finding a way to incorporate more description into the sport, you know, sometimes that's ensuring that the graphics that are up on screen or the statistical information that comes with sports is verbalized, because there's so much of it. You know, I think of like Formula One broadcasts where you get lap times on the screen all the time, and some of that's highly relevant to the experience of the race, and yet because it's visually on screen, the announcers aren't always calling that out. And so that's opportunities to like insert some of that information in. And for us, when we've done things like the Olympics and the Paralympics, we have people who have a sports broadcasting background who've been trained to do audio description, and they handle this work for us. Sports fans can sniff out somebody who doesn't know what they're talking about.
You wouldn't last long. Where do you see it going now? You talk obviously about the big events where you seem to have a good foothold here. How do you see it progressing?
We have a credo at Descriptive Video Works, which is describe everything. Now, we're not trying to describe everything. We're only a handful of people, and there's a lot to be described. But what we are trying to do is sort of create a framework that will allow description to be part of everything. So the end goal would really be to have live sports carry live audio description on as much, if not all, live sporting events as possible. And there isn't really a logical obstacle for that. There's obviously, you know, there's cost factors and stuff for everyone to consider. But the reality is I think the economics of audio description are starting to sort of fall into the making things accessible gains you audience. And so as more and more broadcasters adopt a subscriber-based model, making things accessible means they can reach more people. I think there's a perception amongst people from the broadcast side, from the clients in this case, that they feel like, well, if I have announcers telling people what's happening on screen, why do I need a describer? And so I think we have to recognize that it's not necessarily intuitive that you would need an audio describer for something that has announcers whose job it is to tell you what's happening. But the reality of it is that quite often they're not doing that. And we were recently doing an American baseball game. And I knew from watching baseball games that, you know, a lot of baseball announcers are good storytellers, but I didn't realize how little of the balls and strikes of a baseball game are announced by the announcing team until I heard our work with it. And it was like, it's striking that almost 60% of the time, unless the ball's hit into the field, blind or low vision audience wouldn't necessarily know what the, you know, whether the previous ball was a strike or not. And I think that is not exclusive to a sport like baseball. I think that's true for a lot of sports. I think if you can extrapolate this to tennis, for instance, Wimbledon, the announcers rely heavily on the visual of watching the players hit the ball back and forth, and they don't tell you what every backhand or forehand is doing and that they're going cross court. They might review it in a replay, but not in real time. And so you could name a sport and you could find an example of what isn't being conveyed through a traditional broadcast. And so I really think the limits need to be taken off as to what is possible.
I'm probably a bit like that, Reece, when it comes to football or soccer, as you guys would see it, in that we have commentators who are good storytellers, who'll talk about stats and stories about players, where the match is going. But I don't know that ball could have been kicked to three or four different players. Mm-hmm. But I have no idea that's happened until suddenly they get animated because it's in the box or there's a strike at goal. Mm-hmm. And I think, well, how did it get there?
We've done some proof of concept work with European football, and it's striking. When we speak to clients, they don't quite grasp how little of that information gets conveyed in a broadcast. And in fairness to the primary announcers, they are television broadcasters. They can rely on the visuals to provide that information. And you know, they get criticized for talking too much. So letting the play unfold visually makes sense as a sort of primary function for them. But the field orientation in a football game is vital information. Like, whether you need to know the specific name of the right back for, you know, Leeds United, whether you need to know that the ball is in the sort of defensive midfield on the right hand side, and you know they're passing it up the wing, that's kind of vital information, I think, in order to piece together the experience. Athletes are, in all sports, have a sort of iconic stature in our culture, and one thing I know doesn't happen is that primary television broadcasters don't tell you what they look like. And so visual descriptions of some of these athletes, whether they're exceptionally tall, whether they're short, whether they're light-skinned or dark-skinned or whatever it might be, some of that information is never conveyed. And for an audience member who wants to know, I think it could provide a vital service.
Rhys, it is indeed an interesting time for sports. The work's obviously gone in there. Certainly a lot of hope for the future as well for live sports. But thank you for telling us about Descriptive Video Works here on R&IB Connect Radio.
Well, thank you for having me, Alan. I appreciate it.